Hey there, folks. Welcome to another exciting episode of A Radio Geekly. I'm just Jess, and I'm joined in the studio by collective members David and Michael, a.k.a. Open Mike. How are you gents doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. We are talking monster movies, and we're going to talk all over the board. We're going to talk about the really good ones, the really terrible ones, and everything in between. It's going to be fun. This was a suggestion from you, Open Mike, and I'm curious to dive in and pick your brain and David's brain as well about how we feel about the monster movie genre. I want to start off with just a little definition. I looked on the interwebs, and they defined the monster movie, aka creature feature, as a disaster film focusing on a group of characters struggling to survive attacks by one or more antagonistic monsters, often abnormally large ones. So, my first question for you both is, do you agree with this definition? And, sub-question, would that be a type of film genre you would want to go see, like, right as it got released in the box office?
It'd have to be, okay, right off the bat, they're targeting large, but monster movies encompass just everything, I think. That's just the unknown, a creature, and often from space, underground, teleported from some other dimension, but it's coming here, and it's going to cause harm to life. That's basically a monster movie to me. The ones with the big creatures, that introduces a level of camp that makes things more fun.
Yeah.
And camp... Camp often will make a terrible movie good. No. At least you can enjoy it.
Yeah. Is it one that you would want to go see if it was described as a monster movie?
And so many monster movies have a brand. Like, I've actually never seen Cloverfield, the one I'm sure we'll talk about it. But ones I have seen, like the old Godzilla movies, the Gamera knockoffs, you know, just cashing in on those things where it's a guy in a suit walking around with miniatures, or you know, the guy doesn't even have to be, he could be like a regular size human, but it's basically someone in a suit doing stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that because it's just ridiculous.
Yes. Ridiculous, I think, is the key adjective when it comes to monster movies. Mike?
Me, monster movies is all I really know. Is the guy in the suit.
Right.
I mean, that was my introduction to what a monster movie was all about. It didn't matter if it was King Kong or Godzilla. It was a monster that was bigger than life, bigger than the people around, and just destroying and destruction all over the place. That was my idea of a monster. When you get into like the normal size human level compact creature, I kind of don't have that same feel that would be considered a monster.
I'm
kind of like with the old school destruction, crushing buildings, and everyone running for their lives. I think just a small group of people running from an entity. I see the difference. It's a huge difference in my opinion, and I'm kind of more with the huge, bigger than life.
So when you hear the term monster movie, are you like, yes, I need to go to opening night?
No.
Okay.
I'm not saying that. If it's a good monster movie, if it's one of those huge creatures, I'm more curious than the normal size. Because with the normal size, it usually turns out to be some psycho in a suit.
That's where I think you have to make it clear. Like, it's not a horror, like, human doing it. It has to be a monster.
Yeah. Right.
Not a human monster. I mean, it's
just
a human monster who happened to make a terrible movie.
Yeah. I think about when I hear the term monster movie, I think about some species or being versus the human race. It's always something against humans.
Right.
And it's like, why? It's usually so overly proportioned. So like you said, Godzilla or King Kong, or I even think about Jaws, this giant shark in the ocean, like what all these different so-called monsters against the human race I think of when I hear the term monster movie. And for me, it's not one that I'm like, yes, I need to go buy advance tickets right now, because I have that ideal in the back of my mind, like a lot of these films, that they're more campy and not necessarily like horror movies, which I know that some of the original monster films were kind of deemed more horror, I guess, because of the way like films were shot. Like I think about the very first King Kong film, you know, being in black and white and how it's so just like out of the ordinary, this giant ape, you know, is destroying New York.
And see, that's where the last time I paused when you said, would I run out to go see a movie when they say monster? Not necessarily, but when you say Godzilla, I'm going to go out to go see that.
Yeah.
Every time that a Godzilla movie comes out, I want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
They've been bad. But
built a following.
Yeah, I believe that Godzilla is that thing to see. So yeah. I want to go see that.
Well,
yeah.
On that note, I mean, that is the brand.
Yeah.
And there's a definite vein with that. What's your opinion of, like, I guess the American versions of these movies? When, I mean, we have the classic Terrible 98. Godzilla.
Matthew Broderick. No.
It was awful.
No.
I remember watching it. No. When the movie premiered, I was in a very small town in Nebraska, and it was opening in that small town.
Hmm.
That is not a good sign. When the small town that gets a movie on first run, when usually it doesn't get it until like 2 months later,
wow.
You know that no one wants this movie.
Wow.
The only other time I remember that happening was Judge Dredd, which
okay.
Ow.
Sylvester Stallone, which okay. I made a big deal about that in my hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a warning sign. Yeah, once I seen that he was cast in the movie, but I was still hopeful. And then once I actually started watching it, it was no hope.
I was, yeah. You're probably more, you're a few years older. I enjoyed it, but I was, you know, I didn't know better. I mean,
yeah.
98 was pretty far along. I thought we were going for the just stupid fun of it.
That was reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a Simpsons connection to that movie, too, for some reason.
Enlighten us, David. If
Harry Shearer was he was the radio guy. So when you're,
right.
when you're listening to it, you're listening to Kent Brockman, basically. I can't think of the other actor in it, but there's some other. Oh, Hank Azaria. What am I talking about? Yeah.
Okay.
He's the star as
right.
well. So,
right.
you know. Basically, he's the camera guy. So for some reason, and you can hear their voices, the Simpsons characters in there. I think they're tapping into that fame at the height of the Simpsons as well.
Yeah, at that moment, that was the thing to kind of like piggyback, but it was just no real way to save that. And I mean, each time you mention Godzilla, each time they tried different ways and different cast members, and you said... the American version versus the traditional Japanese version, I believe. I prefer the foreign version much better than the Americanized version. I think most of the problem is they lose sight of the humor.
Hmm.
I mean, come on. I mean, when I was a kid, I was a kid and I knew that he was stepping on, you know, model buildings and this guy in a rubber suit.
Yeah.
But it was just fun to see that the destruction,
mm-hmm.
you know, the effects and the monster with the smoke coming out of his face.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. And once they kind of got away from that and started adding all of this extra...
They had the one that came out in 2000 they made a big deal out of, Godzilla 2000. I remember going to the theater for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back to the campy. We're going back to the classic guy in a suit.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that was made in the United States. I think...
I don't know.
I guess we could find out. But,
yeah.
But that one, did you like that one? Do you remember that one?
Yeah, the hype was up there. Didn't Puffy have a soundtrack on there?
No, you're thinking of the old one, the 98
the other
American one
yeah,
again. Yeah,
sorry.
They did that.
Again.
He basically took that. He ripped off the Led Zeppelin song.
Everybody hated it.
Yeah. Well, Puffy, he likes to take a famous song and just put his own words on it.
But, yeah, the 2000, I guess at the time that was, as far as modern versions, I guess that was the best at that time. And you have to respect the fact that each time that it comes out at that time, that's the best version of it.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, to go back, to continue off of that, Mike, it's like with Jaws, the original Jaws, you were so infatuated with, where's the shark? You know, what's going to happen? And then they made 2 and 3 and you're like, okay, are they going to kill this thing? Like, what is happening?
But sharks are monsters, definitely. Sharks, that type of monster takes on a whole different type of feel.
How so?
Whereas you enter a shark's domain.
Okay.
And being in that domain, you're at a disadvantage. No matter, they show whether you're in a boat or you're in a suit, you're at that creature's
territory,
mercy.
Okay.
And that in itself is terrifying, to know that you have no advantage over this species that's basically how they live, is to hunt. That's their whole existence, is to hunt.
It also taps into a general fear of just people with cold, dark water. Fear of the unknown,
right?
And water is a very common fear. You know, you can go swimming, that's great. Take someone who likes to swim, put them in a lake at night, and it's a little chilly. It's not the same thing. You're not going to enjoy that for the most part.
Right.
I did not enjoy the beach at all during that whole Jaws. I just turned down.
Yeah, you were proof.
I mean, and I lived in Florida as well. So
okay.
Beach just, it was terrifying for me because of that whole ideal of, and it's a reality. So it wasn't something that was made up in your head, but the shark, I mean, this Terminator shark, it was, I mean, imagination, but the shark, its species itself is terrifying.
What'd you think of the Bryan Cranston Godzilla?
Jeez, how many Godzilla movies are there?
This one came out in, looks like, 2014.
Wow.
They made a big deal because Bryan Cranston was just coming off of his...
Malcolm in the Middle?
No. 2014, the Bad...
Breaking Bad?
Breaking Bad, thank you. and he's going there, and he's very serious. He plays a very minor... Well, he plays a significant role, but he's not in the movie very long.
Okay.
And that was disappointing. And then the movie got kind of... Again, it kind of went just silly, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I know some people really liked it. They thought, wow, that's amazing. And then it was like balancing the elements of the earth, or keeping, you know, the good and the evil with these giant monsters. And Godzilla was a surprise, a good guy.
Oh, no, spoiler.
Well, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Well, you know, I think a lot of this stuff, it's kind of like Godzilla. I don't know. It's like humans are always, they may be, you know, the ones that you're cheering for, or, you know, trying to, the ones getting killed. But often it's the monster that wakes up because the humans are bad.
Yes.
The humans are doing something to the environment, and we're like, hey, Mother Nature is going to correct this, and whatever the monster is that is unleashed.
Yeah.
So what is the monster doing during this time before humans decide to dig or
poke,
shake up, or?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Oh, they just sleep in eggs. It's like smog.
They hibernate.
They just, yeah, you steal their what, ring or crown. And,
crack and, the ice.
Yeah. Or it's like with the gremlins, you know, you pour water on them and they
gremlins
just multiply.
That's another one.
That's a whole other genre, too, that was created to Steven Spielberg with the idea of little puppety creatures that, and, you know.
Wreak havoc.
Critters is another, you know, it's a takeoff.
But wasn't
directly,
gremlins a myth, a belief amongst pilots, fighter pilots?
That was, I think, what was the classic Twilight Zone show with
okay.
William Shatner, where he's on the plane right. and he's witnessing mm-hmm. a gremlin tear it apart while he's right. flying. He's like, there's a gremlin on the plane. And
but
then,
I thought it was like something people actually believed.
Well, I mean, yeah. the word didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah. Oh. It's like a mythic, like a mischievous, like sprite or something like that. Like
Mogwai, the yeah. creature that turns into the gremlin right. if you feed it past midnight.
Right.
Was the other.
Yeah. So it was based, I think, some sort of myth that just kind of came out of it, but it made it, I don't know, with the gremlins themselves, like, it was hard to see past, like, oh, well, they're just little. They're just tearing up the kitchen, you know, it's fine.
It's a
they're
fun
not destroying
movie,
a city. Yeah, it's fun. It's like a fun monster
and
movie.
It's a holiday
it
movie.
It could have took a dark turn, though. If they would have just let them continued to do what they were doing, they were really getting dark.
Yeah. And you felt bad for Gizmo because he was just, you know.
I mean, when that movie was 80s.
Yeah.
If you, surprised it hasn't been remade yet, but if it was remade, I just don't know if you can tap into that again.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be puppet. It just doesn't seem like it'd be as fun. Like,
right.
We're in a different.
Yeah. We're in a whole new, like, cinematic realm.
I think part of the problem with these movies is they have, it's such a risk that they spend so much money that they can't really play, they play it so safe, and that's what fails to me. You can't have fun with it, and it has to be serious, or we're gonna, like the latest Godzilla, like, it's a serious movie, you know, we're gonna, this isn't just some fun run for your lives, it's
yeah.
just like, it's a big deal. We got a huge budget, and just part of that. Just that's what frustrates me about some of these things with monster movies is it takes the fun away.
Hmm.
And if you go back to the history of monster movies, you know, going back to your King Kong and forward, it's one when it first started, it was a feat of filmmaking. Like, this was a big change. Like, people never saw stuff like that. Then it just kind of devolved into cheap, campy make out movies at drive-ins. You know, this was an excuse to go waste a double feature, you know, 3 hours.
Well, you think of like Night of the Living Dead. Like, that was totally like the new thing of you take your girlfriend to the drive-in. She's going to be on your arm the whole time because she's freaked out.
That one actually, and that one was effective. And that was another genre bending or whatever. George Romero and his whole zombie thing.
Right, yeah.
And that really took off, huh?
Well, I think it's like all these things. We have our ebbs and flows of what's popular.
Uh-huh.
Right now, zombies. I think they're probably on the downward. The Walking Dead may have been. Now it's kind of played out. It's kind of like how vampires have been played out since the whole Stephanie Meyer,
Twilight,
and everything else. What was the HBO show?
Buffy. You thinking of Buffy?
No. The
True Blood,
thank you.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like the vampire eyes. Everything was about vampires, all the kids' literature, everything, or YA books.
Vampire Diaries and just on and on.
And yeah.
Vampires are sexy now.
Zombies.
Zombies are sexy now.
So there's going to be something else. It just keeps going. I think the Universal's film thing, Misfire with The Mummy, is, I don't know what traction they're going to get out of that. As a monster buff.
Did you see the new Mummy with Tom Cruise?
I witnessed the opening. Everything with Tom Cruise is you got to be prepared to get Tom Cruise, you know, running from stuff, you know, explosions behind him, and
yeah, because he does his own stunts.
Yeah, so. I don't think it was so much about the mummy itself as it was watching Tom Cruise survive all the things that they threw at him. Mm. So,
yeah.
I appreciate Tom Cruise for taking risks with sci-fi movies that probably wouldn't have, like, without his name attached, these vehicles would not get off the ground.
Yeah.
What was, like, The Day After Tomorrow? Oh, goodness. I guess.
The Day After Tomorrow.
But that was, wasn't that John Cusack? In that movie, The After Tomorrow,
we got.
Oh man,
we have resources here.
Oh man, my husband's gonna shoot me. He loves that movie.
But I did want to bring up something else about the whole.
Oh no, my
Night
apologies.
Of the
that
Living
was Jake.
Dead
that
thing.
Was a Jake Gyllenhaal.
I did not mean to say that movie.
Dennis Quaid movie.
I honestly, there was a great movie that he was in, and I'm going to say it before I. get done here. Edge of Tomorrow, that one.
Oh, okay.
Edge of
okay.
Tomorrow.
But he's been in a lot of
that
sci-fi
was a Tom
movies.
Cruise movie?
Yeah, and
reboot.
He did. He even did the. Okay. Well, it was that wasn't a reboot. He rebooted War of the Worlds, which I thought was good too. Edge of Tomorrow was where he keeps having to re. He keeps coming back to life because aliens are attacking.
That's why I mentioned the reboot. He just keeps restarting.
Oh, that's okay.
Restarting.
Yeah, okay.
Now, that movie was great. I love that one.
I like the idea of the way that movie went.
It may have been too much for people to take because you had to think that's not fair. But it kind of stretched your mind around. Mm. Like so many things are like so blunt in your face, and mm-hmm. if you missed it, they'll have a recap of it within the movie.
Yeah. But Mike, what were you gonna say?
I was actually thinking about Tremors.
Oh yes.
That still exists. And when you were talking about like taking risks and not putting yourself out there and to imagine, I mean seriously, they're still doing Tremors.
They're still making
Yes.
I know they were doing it for a while, and I think sci-fi picked up the property.
Yeah.
Mm. Which would make sense because that seems like a sci-fi type of movie that they can just
that
run with.
Everyone else just gives up and sci-fi will take it on Sharknado.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Sharknado. Well, that goes into a different thing. And I'm I see a Tremors.
Those are monsters.
Sharknado was the taking campy to a whole new ridiculous realm. And I can't believe they made like 3 or 4 of those.
Six?
I don't know. It was just like, mm-hmm. how many can Ian Ziering handle? How many can he sign up for?
as many as sci-fi will pay for.
Yeah.
So Tremors 1990. It looks like they have at least a Tremors 5.
Six.
All right. Well,
and there's like this overarching theme. I mean, if you look at as we're like researching all of these things as we're talking, you see the movie posters, and it's always the image of the monster blown out of proportion, and then the human is like tiny. You know, I'm just looking at the Tremors poster right now, and it's like the giant sandworm underneath, and it's like the small. So it's like bringing it into perspective too of like who has the advantage here.
Well, okay, I know it's a different age of movie making, but Tremors is a good example. The movie isn't an expensive movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stakes aren't if something, you know, the world is going to end as these movies often end up being. Like,
yeah.
It's just this town and these people banding together and saving the day from these little, you know, snake creatures that fear the unknown, the underground. The movie was wonderful.
They weren't little, and it wasn't a wonderful, heartwarming movie. They were terrorizing that town.
Yeah.
And once they were finished with that town, they were going to move on to the next town because that's what they did.
Those were the stakes, I guess, but it wasn't like if this person doesn't push this button in time, the world is over type thing.
Right.
But it was fun. That's why I liked. I mean, it was a fun movie, and I wish there were more things like that. But that's what I mean by taking risks and just making a movie that doesn't necessarily have to have those stakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we should pause just for a second because we want to talk more in depth on comparing some of the good monster movies. Mike, you had a few suggestions, and David, you did as well. We're going to take a brief music break. We'll come back, do some more movie reviews, good and bad, and the future that we hope for the monster movie genre. So stay tuned. You try to scream, but dare I take the sound before you make it? And you start to freeze as someone looks you right between the eyes. You're paralyzed, cause this is daylight night, and no one's gonna save you from the beast of our strength. You know it's daylight night, you're fighting.
midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. Stenches in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no immortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Welcome back to Radio Geekly. We're talking monster movies here. I'm just Jess. I've got Mike and David in the studio. And I wanted to dive deeper into some movie reviews, the good and the bad. But one of you was mentioning how there's always, like, well, for the most part, there's this formula of human interaction or messing with things they shouldn't have. And then the monster gets awoken or gets really angry and then retaliates against the humans. So, kind of for example, let's describe the movie The Host. Mike, you were saying that this is one of those kind of a revamping of the monster movie genre. Talk a little bit about the premise of that film.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of, like, the, like I said, the larger than life type of monster. That seems to have more of a fear to be placed in a position where there's no defense against, no physical defense against something huge and destructive. So when I watched The Host, and not getting too deep into the details of the story, but basically it's that same premise of human intervention or human, you know, they do something that's careless that causes a reaction and causes this monster to take over this river bank and cause destruction all over the place. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought that movie was pretty good in that aspect.
Yeah.
There was, I remember in middle school, we had to read read Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison.
Oh, okay.
And a couple of my friends read The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells, and they didn't do so well on that test.
Oh, no.
So I just want to be clear. The Host we're talking about here is a Korean movie.
Yes.
Right.
From 2006 by Bong Joon-ho.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone on, I mean, he makes some great movies. Probably the most well-known Korean filmmaker at the moment. Not The Host, the Stephenie Meyer book from 2013 that did not do so well. We don't want to confuse you, so I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
The Host that Mike is talking about is pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not what it's what I like about it is that it's one, it's very competent, and it's just sort of like some guys are irresponsible. That guy puts a bunch of formaldehyde
military personnel.
Yeah, he's like, we're just gonna dump it into the Han River, and then this monster just sort of mutates and starts terrorizing things. And it's a family struggle where the guy and is trying to protect his family, and it's just eating everyone. And they even have like a turn. I don't know if it was trying to appeal to the American market, but they have like that soldier who just happens to be on leave, and he's like fighting to save the day too. Just, you know, I think they were very deft at making the humans very real.
Mm-hmm.
And just like when that monster's vomiting all those bones is pretty awesome. it was fun. It also had that element of terror, but it wasn't like, it wasn't a slog. Like, I know there are, like, feel-bad movies. There's things like, oh, I don't want to watch this. I just want to enjoy it. This one was enjoyable.
Yeah, right? it was like an adventure as well. It, like, to reunite the father and his daughter, it was just watching that whole thing unravel and him starting to realize the responsibility. And it was just a whole bunch of things wrapped up in one. You get the emotion, you get the adventure, you get the horror every time the monster comes back to the den or the nest mm-hmm. and starts licking stuff.
Yeah, I think that was a good kind of rehashing of a monster movie, because you had this fear of this creature coming to attack, but then there was also some sort of like redemptive element for the people. It wasn't just they were on this mission to like kill the monster. They also had this other submission to try to reunite family ties, and like the grandpa is like, you know, trying to bring everybody together, and you know, just his story too. Like, there was actual character development, which is really rare, I think, in a lot of monster movies.
Yeah, you cared about people in the story.
You actually cared. And there was, I just think about some of these others that you're like, well, it's, you know, I don't care about any of these other gremlins except Gizmo, because he's cute and he's got big, you know, big brown eyes. Like, you know,
or you have your introduction to the six people and you just start ticking them off. Who's dying next?
Right. Who's going to get killed off first?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then going on to kind of a similar take, but a little bit different, more advanced in technology, I guess you can say, is with Life. And that was a film in 2017, Daniel Espinosa film. There's these astronauts on the International Space Station. They're collecting samples, I believe, from Mars. And they find this creature, end up bringing it back to life, and then it wreaks havoc. So, again, it's that human interaction messing with things that they're not really clear about. I think it was kind of interesting how they have their laboratory on the space station, and they're like, no one else can go in here. Like, it must be in this confined area. So it leads me to believe, like, well, it must be not very safe if they're just having just the one scientist guy and they're trying to communicate with him, you know, on the on the intercom.
Yeah, both of these movies have they're both military, and they both use poor practice.
Yes.
You know, the people in charge, they're not giving them good directions. And in Life, like you said, you know, they have this new discovery. And first of all, I always have a problem when you want to bring that stuff on board and study it. Mm-hmm. That's always a bad idea, in my opinion, when they want to bring stuff on board and like, let's study it and we'll contain it and take it back. And then somehow someone gets attached to it and mm-hmm. want to do more. And want to save it,
right?
Get involved with it,
right?
Well, and I'm with you on that. Except now, Life isn't necessarily a new idea when it comes to movies. Just like the Host wasn't. It was, you know, the Host was kind of bringing back classic monster movie, but in a really, you know, fun, modern, good way. Mm-hmm. This Life, in many ways, is kind of a rehash of Alien.
Yes,
where you're in an isolated space station. You have a limited, you know, cast of crew members.
Mm-hmm. Edibles.
Yeah. and then something, you know, like it gets out and wreaks havoc. But what I liked about this movie, I mean, it was beautiful. You could tell they put a lot of work into it. I don't think it got a lot of traction, but whatever. But maybe because it wasn't that inventive. But what I did enjoy about it is that it was very what you would expect from, I think, space station. I thought they were very disciplined and everything was locked down and they all had protocols. They weren't, you know, there wasn't the person going off the cuff, which...
Well, it kind of... Ryan Reynolds' character
Yeah, that guy, that thing. You're right. Yeah. Yeah,
the other guy, that. The other guy had some kind of attachment to the thing. He would go in there and pet it all the time and just have some kind of extra interaction
they
with
still
it.
Did, like, but having it on lockdown, having everything isolated, you're right, I guess, in some respects, there was that. But that's the part that always makes my head explode when it comes to these movies. In particular, the Alien series, especially the more recent ones, like with Prometheus, it's like they're going to spend how many billions of dollars to send these people light years away to some distant, and then they have the most inept, stupid crew who don't, like, I'm going to take off my helmet now, and this thing's going to get in my eyes. Like,
yeah.
What did you just, like, you put all your investment on the dumbest people you could possibly right. send out there. They have no discipline. It's like they completely, and that's what drives me crazy about those movies. And that's where I thought life was at least competent in that regard. They had that discipline and they had that realism of what you'd hope to expect up there. Otherwise, except for the shortcomings of what you said. Yeah, mm-hmm. Ryan Reynolds has got to be Ryan Reynolds.
He has a streak other than, I guess in Deadpool, he's already dead. But he has a streak that he doesn't really last past 15 minutes in these movies that he's coming out with.
Unless he's the big star. So I think
it's awesome.
I think Jake Gyllenhaal was supposed to be the main person.
And the emotion.
In that, yeah, he had the biggest investment. Like, he wanted to keep him alive.
But it was super awesome just watching him shoot that thing, trying to shoot it all over that room. And it's like, why are you shooting that on a spaceship?
Right.
It was a well-done movie. But to me, it's part of that problem I have with, I want them to be a little more inventive mm-hmm. on things. Because we kind of knew getting into it what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Just how are they going to get to that point? And I know there's that little twist at the
end.
It makes it fun.
That makes it fun.
Yeah.
It has to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what keeps you interested. I mean, to me, it's like you don't want to give everything up front. And you don't want to kind of lean toward all the effects and mm-hmm. the explosions. And I mean, to me, that kind of bores me. I like the stories. I like the characters, I like the mm-hmm. character development. I like the person not to like.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to, and I think to keep the story going, you probably have to have that person that has some kind of attachment, or the person that wants to study it,
mm-hmm.
the person that wants to house it, and
right.
I'll take care of it.
Yeah.
You have to have that person because, you know.
Yeah. Did any of you see that movie Arrival?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one was kind of, when you were talking about, like, there's that one person that needs to have that investment, like, she, I can't remember the actress's name, but she wanted to be, like, she found the reason to actually have her purpose to be interactive with this alien species, and everyone else was like, this is so odd, I don't know, like, what are we gonna do? We're basically trying to, like, experiment with it, and she had the you know, knowledgeability of knowing, like, I want to actually build a relationship with
Amy Adams.
Thank you.
What I liked about that one, I mean, the monster, there weren't really monsters either. It was that unknown, though. But mm-hmm. the hero of that movie was a linguist.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, it's just, the movie got really interesting to me. And I think this is where they take that difference, like that technique that you don't expect, that makes it, the risk, I should say, kind of like with Edge of Tomorrow with that Tom Cruise movie, but mm-hmm. it was the time twisting element of that movie that you didn't really know what you're getting to until you started piecing it together. And they did a good job of revealing, you know, the future and the past, like how she had that within her. It's just
yeah.
kind of a weird thing that you didn't know what you're getting into.
Right. And until the end. And then you're like, oh,
it almost made you want to watch it again in that regard. Like,
yeah,
because
now you know what's happening and trying to piece the puzzle together.
Yeah. And when you, I was sold as like, these aliens are coming here and she talks to them
right.
and tries to see what they're up to. But there was a lot more underneath than what we thought we were getting into.
Yeah.
I don't know if that one classifies as a monster movie. It could easily have been a monster movie, I suppose.
Yeah.
I want to take a little turn and piggyback off of what you were saying, but using a different movie, like with Jurassic Park, you have that scientists or the corporation that believes that this is a great amusement park.
We can bring back the dinosaurs.
Yeah, and we can just have people come through and it'd be fun for the family to come and see dinosaurs live.
That's
a new camp now.
The bad guy, new again. The bad guy is once again man
mm-hmm.
and corporate.
Yeah. Yeah. See,
there are some interesting undertones too. When you watch that movie, you're like, are they trying? Do they have an agenda?
Are they telling us something?
This movie?
I have a bone with Jurassic Park in one thing. It's kind of unrelated, but it is that the original movie came out in 92, and it was a big deal. I mean, it, you know, mm-hmm. amazing effects.
It
and
made me fear going to porta potties.
Oh.
And one of the things that I like about stuff like that is it was inspiring. How many people got, I mean, dinosaurs, kids like dinosaurs when you grow up, but, mm-hmm. you know, this is, people wanted to become paleontologists. People wanted to learn about these things. And then it brought into, like, it let people know that it's more than just the bones. It's the genes. Like, there's two avenues of like, study here that has to do with our history and our evolution. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's, we there's so much more that we know now. My problem with the new movies is that we know so much more since then. And the dinosaurs, it's becoming pretty much common knowledge that dinosaurs had feathers. So
yeah.
What we knew then about velociraptors, like we were going to introduce this neat, oh, wow, let's go play with these toy figures. Now the movies are kind of holding science back in some respects because we know more about dinosaurs now that the movies are still reinforcing what we like the wrong things about them. Like if they realistically had the dinosaurs in there now as we know of them, they should have feathers.
Yeah.
And you know, they're the warm-blooded whatever stuff. They're not lizards, just like they're birds. And I wish they would have more about that so that as we inspire new kids, they go, no, dinosaurs shouldn't have feathers. I saw Jurassic Park or I saw Jurassic World. It's like,
right.
But they do. That movie was wrong.
Yeah.
But that's my tangent about that. I like it when movies are able to, you know, give people something to think about, mm-hmm. and just inspire
yeah.
to some degree.
Yeah.
You still have to, that human element with greed and the desire to exploit nature.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the way they've been gearing the whole Jurassic series is how nature kind of fights back at these characters, whichever one they come up with mm-hmm. new ones, how the nature fights back against it, or it's pretty much what those creatures would have done if they were around
mm-hmm.
today. I find it, it's okay as far as movies are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to run out and go see a new Jurassic. It just doesn't have that same feel for me as like a Godzilla movie.
Hmm.
I just like that mindless destruction.
I think it's in the realm of what movies are in general. It's such a giant budget
mm-hmm.
and such a risk that they, you know, you know what you're getting into, and you can't really take. It's that classic monster movie again.
Yeah.
Where you know the greed of the corporations causing problems, and you got this guy. You can't do that, and he's gonna ride a motorcycle and have to save the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of like greed and everything, let's flip this conversation and talk about some bad monster movies.
Hmm.
There was a movie in 1985, David, that you suggested I watch.
I suggested this because...
called The Galaxy Invader.
Right. And the reason that I felt it necessary for you to watch this...
please enlighten our listeners.
Well, I have a thing where there is a sincerity to movies, bad movies, that these new movies just don't have. It's like when you're talking about Sci-Fi Channel making Sharknado or Sharktopus or whatever
mm-hmm.
nonsense they have. They are missing the point to me of what actually drives a bad movie.
Yeah.
It's not... like, those movies are made to be bad. They know they're bad. They're throwing a bunch of stuff. They're like, oh, look at this terrible movie. It's got a stupid name. And that's the point. Like, oh, I'm going to watch this terrible movie. But when you get down to it, people aren't really watching the movie. They're talking about it like crazy. Sharknado.
Yeah.
No one's watching it. So it's like the joke is so evident in your face that it kind of misses the actual movie. The movie's not made for a good reason. Now, The Galaxy Invader... and movies in this realm is, to me, it's sincere. It's so sincerely bad. The person making it, it's when a movie, when someone makes a movie not realizing just how terrible their movie is. And we have, like, I think good examples of The Room was the one that, you know, that they, that's everyone knows about now, thanks to John Franco, or James Franco, excuse me. But it's like these movies that people make because they don't realize how terrible they are. They're putting their money into it, and and then it becomes this cult property. This movie, The Galaxy Invader, sticking with that, it's public domain because, you know, it's the guy couldn't even hold on to the, there's no point. And this guy's made a bunch of terrible movies, but
I think it's funny because when I watched it, it reminded me of something that I would do in like a college film class. Like, this is my final project, so I'm like bringing all my, you know, peers and like maybe my little brother, and, you know,
get
like
the whole family involved.
Get the whole family involved.
And you're watching the credits, you see like that must be his wife. That's his brother.
Yeah.
See, I didn't have the luxury to have people tell me that the movie was going to be bad. I would go through VHS tapes like, you know, Dollar Rental. Hey, it's Friday night. Let's rent this.
Right.
And that's where I would come across Toxic Avenger and Basket Case and, you know, movies like that. And go, wow, this movie is bad, but it's fun.
That's We are missing that, you know, these days, thanks to the internet. That's where, I mean, you can't take risks or you can't slip stuff by like that. There's a surprisingly amount of bad movies still being made, but it's not the same. It's not like you said, the adventure of going to a VHS rental house, because you have no idea what you're getting into except for the most mainstream stuff out there.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this one looks interesting. Yeah, Robot Jocks. That cover was amazing.
There you go.
Like giant robots fighting each other.
Chub. Cannibalistic underground dwellers.
You're watching it, and you're like, this is, you know. And also you have the luxury of being a youth and not knowing better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least, you know, that's, and also the options you had, you know, if you're lucky, you know, if you four channels and you don't want to watch, you just this was your night. For me, it was a 3-liter bottle of root beer and a bag of Our Family brand cheese puffs. And that was a good night. And
I think for The Galaxy Invader, I think not only was, it was just a bad movie, but I think the guy who did the film score, I think he was the most invested outside of the actual writer of the film.
Isn't it amazing?
There was so much music in, like, unnecessarily so.
Yeah, he probably was invested, huh?
It was distracting.
Oh, no, it was really entertaining because I was just laughing. I'm like, this needs some music right here. Oh, wait, there it is.
I wonder if he got a job after that.
Well, you know,
Hollywood.
Oh, it was like that synth. You could tell like one guy on a keyboard. To give more premise to this movie we're talking about, and you should definitely see it. It is, it's
public domain.
So you could find it somewhere. YouTube, you could probably dig it up. But anyway, it features a family of probably the worst father in the world.
Yes.
Right off the bat, he's threatening to shoot his daughter. As her porn star esque boyfriend says, this is the fourth time I'm gonna do something.
Oh, yeah. No.
His outfit or whatever, his costuming in this movie was basically a torn white undershirt throughout the entire movie, which
the dad had a torn white undershirt around his stomach of all places.
Yeah, it was like this giant hole in his shirt. And he was just
always had a bottle of something in his hand.
His inept son JJ, his daughter, and there's like his younger daughter Annie. At one point, they go into the house and she's having like a sleepover with her friends. Like, I thought that was just charming.
They're like playing games on the floor.
Like, I hate my dad.
Yeah.
But anyway, they find an alien as he's chasing his daughter with a shotgun or rifle. He runs into an alien, and naturally he shoots the alien, and the alien drops his ball. That's just basically this white plastic ball that kind of has a white ball in it.
It's like you get at like a craft store. It's like a styrofoam ball.
Yeah, it's like flashing. Like, oh, this is going to be worth money. And he goes, JJ, go get the wheelbarrow. And they bring the wheelbarrow with this ball, and they take it back to their garage. And we're going to make some money. Let's get Frank. And Frank is this...
He's like the guru of the town.
He's like the town. Yeah, the town.
The rich man.
Yeah, he's
of the
in
town.
He chomps on the cigar and he has his floozy girlfriend. And they're going to go, yeah, well, the ball might be worth something, but the alien or the green monster is going to be worth even more. Let's get it.
We should plan to go out in the middle of the night, and we should get some guys.
Yeah, they round up some guys.
Go to the local bar. And
these people worked out well.
The actors are clearly just normal people, especially like his wife.
Yes,
it's just like someone's mom.
Yeah,
I like how terrible.
And they do let it. Like, I mean, both of you guys have some background in filming, but it's like they do the quick jump cuts to somebody's like terrorized face and then they go back
the framing of the movie is over the place. Like suddenly you got someone's face but it's like in a weird position, super close up.
Yes.
I had to take some notes because it was the cross the sound
list of all the bad things in the movie.
The sound, every time you had a different camera angle, the sound was entirely different.
Yes.
It's like, so you have a conversation between two people. It's like this camera shot, the sound's this. This camera shot, it's like you're just cutting back and forth. It's wonderful.
And this is before cell phones.
Oh yeah. The awful fighting scenes where it's like slow motion.
Yes.
The end scene with the mom and the alien and that.
Like the prepared punches, like the guy standing waiting for.
There's
the
like they're stuck. The climax is there's this dirt hole. They're like but they portray it's like this giant pit, but the camera angle, there's obviously not a pit there. It's like this little hole. So then the camera pointing up at the guy, it's like it's a giant pit.
Yeah.
And then they cut away to a different shot, this giant cliff. And then did you like when the tumble down scene?
It's like some like paper doll.
Did you have to watch that again?
Like a rag doll that they like chucked over this ditch to make it look like a guy was getting, you know, thrown
his
over
comeuppance
to this giant crevine.
That always works. You take a mannequin or a doll or some clothes stuffed with paper and you throw it over a cliff. It works. It's good cinema.
The movie's short. Yeah, it still has room for five long, drawn out running scenes through the forest.
Yes,
where you're watching the entire person entering the frame, running through the entire frame, running out, and then the camera stays on the shot as another person does it, and then another. Yeah. It's like we kept doing it more and more. Like now we're gonna move the camera, reposition over here so the trees look a little different.
Yes,
and do it again. They did that five times.
It was hilarious. So I mean, with all that to say, there, I thank you, David, for suggesting that film. I had a good laugh, if anything, on that movie.
I gotta say though, that Joe was a terrible man. That's the father.
Yeah,
and he did become a whole lot less likable at one point in the movie when he does.
Yes.
When he basically assaults
a lady,
but
she gets away,
and then he shoots her in the chest. outright.
We're just gonna tell you the whole movie.
I love like this is just a casual murder. It's like let's go. We gotta bury the bodies. Like there's just,
no one cares.
It's justified.
That's fine.
So. You gotta look past. Or you know it exists because it's so stupid.
Well, I think we had a great conversation. Monster movies, good and or bad, I think overall are entertaining in one way, shape, or form.
Appreciate the bad. Appreciate the sincerity.
Yes. Yes.
There's a balance between the two.
And join the camp, if you will. Whether it's Godzilla or King Kong or a really bad alien movie from 1985.
And share it.
And share it. Share it amongst your friends.
Why choose? Just have all monsters. Now, all monsters are welcome.
If you watch that movie alone, that's a shame. You want to get into a group of people and you make fun of that thing.
Do a Mystery Science Theater viewing of it. So thank you to Mike and David for joining me in this conversation. As we wrap up here, I want to give just a brief few events that you can check out here in the Rose City. This weekend, June 2nd and 3rd, is Fandom PDX, a convention for all things fandom at the Sheridan Portland Airport Hotel. More info can be found at fandompdx.com. The Rose Festival Dragon Boat Race is happening June 9th and 10th at the south end of the Waterfront Park. More info can be found rosefestival.org/event/dragon-boat-race.
Hopefully there's some baby geese to see too.
Oh, yes. Coho Productions is going to be releasing their Summerfest series, a theater series, starting on June 28th and running through July 22nd. More info at cohoproductions.org. And finally, the Second Shop Anniversary Bash is going to be on June 2nd at the Books with Pictures Comic Shop. More info about that can be found at bookswithpictures.com. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Radio Geekly. I'm just Jess. Tune in at noon for Moving On. And thanks so much for tuning in here to your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Take care.